Today, we have a very different show for you. I'm recording this episode from the offices of the World Health Organization in Manila, Philippines. We are discussing the emerging coronavirus outbreak. This episode, we are talking to an expert from WHO about what you need to know about the coronavirus. We go into exactly what the coronavirus is, how and why it's dangerous if you're infected, and current treatments available. More importantly, we discuss the things that you, your community, and workplace can do to stay safe, and the action steps you can take to reduce spread and exposure. We also discuss how infectious this thing is, its severity, i.e. the death rate, the reason behind the recent spike of 15,000 new cases last Friday the 14th, and the dangers of fear-mongering and fake news. You might be asking what the coronavirus has to do with outsourcing. Well, the outsourcing industry is the single biggest employer in the Philippines. It is a people industry. There are nearly 1.5 million people in outsourcing, with most of them working in high-rise office blocks, sharing confined space, and working around the clock with shift work, extra shifts, and high-pressure environments to contend with. The BPO industry is prone to colds and flu, and we're right in the middle of the flu season right now. So it's important, more than ever, for the industry to be aware of what it can do to stay healthy, happy, and productive. Chinese production and manufacturing and its economy has been hit hard by the effects of the coronavirus and the associated quarantine measures. The Philippine outsourcing industry relies on being dependable with zero downtime. I can only imagine the disruption to BPO clients in the West if a major call center was quarantined and staff couldn't show up for work. So we explore what the BPO and outsourcing industry needs to know to stay safe and the steps they can take to keep their people and workplace risk-free. Today, I'm joined by Wang Capistrano. She's an expert and lead consultant for emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases with the World Health Organization. She's probably one of the busiest people in the Philippines right now with everything that's going on, so I'm super grateful for her time. In this episode, we discuss a number of websites and resources that you can visit. All of these links are provided in the show notes to this podcast. You can find these at outsourceaccelerator.com/corona. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with your friends, colleagues, and community. Let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients, or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there. Wang, can you start by explaining who is the WHO exactly and what their role is in this?
Okay, WHO is a specialist agency under the United Nations that is concerned with world public health. So WHO has 194 member states in its responsibility. We provide technical assistance to every member states, and actually, every member states can request us, the WHO, if they need us in some form of assistance regarding commodities or expertise.
So you must be very busy, obviously, during this coronavirus
yes.
situation. And what is your, what is the WHO position and involvement within the coronavirus management?
The WHO already provided technical guidelines since the beginning of the outbreak. So we provided technical guidelines on case management, on laboratory diagnosis, on infection prevention and control, on provision of care in home, as well as the general guidelines on the public, on how to do social distancing, personal hygiene. And most of the countries didn't have capability to test the 2019 novel coronavirus has been provided for by WHO together with its different supranational laboratories or reference laboratories in the world.
Okay, great. And Wang, thank you for your time. You are the consultant for emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases yes. with the WHO. And you know, you are now in the position of managing this this coronavirus situation as it emerges. Can you just introduce yourself and your professional background?
Yeah, so I'm Wang Capistrano. I'm a field epidemiologist. We are fondly called the disease detectives
nice.
In the health sector. So I was with the Department of Health for 23 years. So I've been in, part of the Research Institute for Tropical Medicine. That's the National Reference Laboratory of the Department of Health. I've been part of the response for SARS, for influenza H1N1 pandemic, and of course the MERS coronavirus. And I've been to different places in the country for different kinds of outbreaks for infectious and tropical diseases. So I've joined WHO last September 2019 after Department of Health. And this time I'm supporting the program of the Disease Prevention and Control Bureau of the Department of Health, which is the Emerging and Re-emerging Infectious Disease Program. So all of diseases that are new and re-emerging in the country, or diseases that has been controlled before and are doing some kind of problem with the country, I've been supporting them for that.
Great. So you've certainly got a lot of personal experience in a lot of those big previous outbreaks in the region.
Yeah, I was also trained in China CDC in 2013 for field epidemiology. So
okay, so let's get into it then. What is the 2019 N coronavirus? Can you explain the sort of physiology of what this virus is?
Okay, so this is a novel coronavirus. It means it's new. It's a new virus that has not been previously identified in humans. So the strain of this virus had not been affecting human since then, but it was a part of the coronavirus in animals. So it first started in Wuhan, China in December 2019. The disease is now called COVID-19. That's the name of the disease, while the virus is called the 2019 novel coronavirus. So a coronavirus is the large family of viruses. So it is found both in animals and humans. So in humans, there are six known coronaviruses. That includes the MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, and the Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, or SARS. And this time, the 2019 novel coronavirus is the seventh of the known coronavirus in humans.
So these are mutations of sort of the same kind of virus body, but then they mutate into different forms. and they take on their own lives from there. Yeah.
Yes, it's much safer to say that this is a spillover of from animals who have coronavirus to humans.
Okay, and so the origin was Wuhan, and you know, as you mentioned, we've had SARS, which was a sort of previous iteration of the coronavirus, and then we had MERS.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, you know, made headlines. There was a lot of cases and sort of a number of deaths. What is the relative comparison of the coronavirus? I understand one of the significant points of comparison is the R0, which is the sort of level of infectiousness, and then another point is the danger of the virus. So how many deaths to cases? Is that right?
Yeah. For now, the COVID-19 is the data about COVID-19 is not that complete yet. That's why it's called a novel or new. Based on the preliminary data, the reproductive rate or the rate of the virus that can infect an individual and then that individual can infect another or transfer the virus to another is between 1 to 4 persons per one infected. However, this kind of reproductive rate is actually almost similar to MERS and the SARS, and also for flu,
right.
Influenza.
And the relevance to that ratio is if it's a 1-to-1 infection rate, then it's a fairly linear infection. If one person gets infected and passes it on to one person, whereas if one person passes it on to 4 people, then 4 people pass it on to 16, then it has a more of an exponential growth in terms of spread and infection. Is that right?
Yes, that's why it's very significant to have control measures so that this reproductive capacity of the virus will be halted. But comparing to measles and varicella or chickenpox, they have the reproductive capability of almost 18
wow.
persons. So this is quite, you know, not that significant compared to measles.
Okay, that's good to know. And the difficulty in having these metrics is that when these viruses are new, you're really figuring things out as you go along. You don't necessarily have full visibility on the number of infections, on the cases, on the touch points. Is that right? It's only really in hindsight that you can get a fully validated view on the R0 and things like that.
Yes. That's the one of the main important WHO role is for all data to be made available to all member states and for all scientists and researchers to have a hand on this data so that we can understand this virus more on its perspective and more on its transmissibility and severity.
Right.
However, the prevention and control for the novel coronavirus or the COVID-19 is almost the same as any other respiratory illness. Now, it's very basic. It's personal hygiene, cough etiquette, the hand washing.
Mm. And I want to dive into that as well because it's a lot of it is just about the basic fundamentals, isn't
yes.
it? And there's not any reason to be overly concerned about this virus because it can be managed, or it certainly
yes.
seems to be. In terms of the severity of the virus, now there was Ebola, which you know had a lot of headlines because that was obviously a severe disease. Where does the coronavirus sit in terms of the severity?
Yeah, the severity data is not yet that complete. However, given that almost 99% of the cases are in China, the data coming from China is that most of the cases have mild symptoms, you know, respiratory illness, runny nose, sore throat, cough, and fever. But for the severe cases, it's more on the older people and those persons who have underlying conditions like diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, and liver problems.
So they're probably already in a sort of weakened, susceptible state.
Yes.
And is it true, I heard as well, that there seems to be very few cases of children having the coronavirus or confirmed cases? So I don't know if they're less susceptible.
We don't have that final data yet, but because we should remember that the outbreak started from a seafood market, so most of the affected are those working or frequenting that seafood market. So there are less children going to that seafood market as well as working in that seafood market. So it's quite understandable that most of the cases are the adults.
Okay. And there's, you know, this is making headlines across the world. There's a certain amount of fear about this, and there's also the added complexity of a lot of fake news.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at the numbers, there's, you know, maybe sort of 65,000 confirmed cases.
Yes.
Now. But you compare that to the seasonal flu in the US, and that's around about 13 million cases with about 10,000 deaths. And that is just normal garden flu, and you certainly don't get the same amount of news headlines as you do about the flu. So it's important to put this into perspective, isn't it? Have caution yet be, put into perspective.
Yes, you're right, Derek. Because influenza is a very seasonal as well as very regular sickness around the world. However, influenza has a vaccine. So if you wanted to have protection against influenza, you can always get vaccine. But for COVID-19, we don't have a vaccine yet or a cure against COVID. So that's where the fear. It's very understandable for people to get, you know, afraid because they cannot get vaccine against the disease. However, having said that, the non-pharmaceutical tool that is available for all of us, for every human, is our capability to protect ourselves from this kind of diseases. It is either influenza or SARS or MERS-CoV or COVID, to COVID-19. It's in our, you know, capability. We have the capability, we have the tool.
Right.
To prevent this.
And I want to go into that soon. I just want to go a little bit deeper in terms of, I suppose, the downsides and explore what is this bug, if we catch it, what does it mean? It affects the breathing, it affects the lungs. Can you just talk a little bit about the pathology of, what are the signs and symptoms of the coronavirus? And then we're going to jump into, you know, how we can prevent this and what actions we should be taking.
Yeah, so the signs and symptoms are usually fever. Almost 90% of the cases in China had fever. And then respiratory illness such as cough, sore throat, colds. And of course, just like other coronaviruses, it actually has mild symptoms. But again, if you have underlying conditions, or if you are elderly or very young, your immune system is not that capable to defeat the virus, because this is a virus. A virus infection is a self-limiting one. It means you can defeat the virus if your immune system is strong, and this virus will go away and you will recover. However, if you have underlying conditions that can complicate things, the virus can actually overcome your immune system, and you will have a severe form of the disease, which is a difficulty of breathing, shortness of breath, and pneumonia.
Okay. And on that, the fact that it is a virus, it's not bacterial, can you just explain the sort of the core differences between what a viral infection is versus bacterial, and also why things like antibiotics can't help with viral infections.
Antibiotics works with infection caused by bacteria. That's why they are called antibacterial medication or drugs. While for viruses, we have antivirals for influenza, but we don't have antivirals for coronavirus or MERS or SARS. So having said that, this kind of virus is can be overcome if we have a very strong immune system. So antibiotics doesn't work for coronavirus, for the COVID-19. However, if you have complications that can be brought about by bacterial pneumonia, your physician can actually do antibiotics treatment as well as supportive treatment. Depends on the clinical management of the physician.
Okay, so it's not about just taking whatever medications you can find. It's about, if you have concerns, having this properly treated.
Yes, definitely.
And there's a big conversation around quarantine, often 2 weeks quarantine. What is it about the period of infection to having symptoms and then to passing it on and having that window of infection where you can pass it on? Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the incubation period means it's the first time that you got the virus and the onset of or the first sign that the symptoms appear up to 14 days. That's the incubation period for MERS, SARS, as well as this coronavirus based on the current data.
So that's when the virus is in your body, but it takes that time for it to grow to a certain level where you're then symptomatic.
Yes.
And so, are you infectious within that time?
So the infectious period is the period wherein you can transfer the virus to other individual or to the environment as well. For COVID-19, there are data or there are persons who already had been tested to be confirmed to have the virus, but they don't have the symptoms. However, these are very few. Based on the current outbreak, more people who are symptomatic or who have the symptoms are spreading the virus than those who don't have the symptoms.
Right.
So,
and that's where it's difficult. If there's something obvious like measles, where there's red marks on your body, whereas if you just have a bit of a runny nose, it's more difficult to identify and contain.
Yes, but if you have a runny nose, you already have a symptom.
Mm.
So the terminology in onset of illness means any sign of clinical symptom. It can be fever, it can be a runny nose or sore throat. That would be the first sign of symptoms.
Right. Do you know, this is a side subject, but do you know if the health system here has been inundated with people with concerns that they've got a runny nose? Is that then something that the system has to cope with? A lot of inquiries about what would normally be very common cold symptoms. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yes, they have a lot of inquiries, I think, because they have a hotline. Mm. It's the Department of Health hotline is 711-1001, 711-1002. And it's a 24/7 hotline wherein you can ask everything that the Department of Health is concerned with. So they're getting a lot of course, inquiries, especially those person in the condominium wherein there are Chinese people living there. So, yeah, these are the most common inquiries right now.
Right. And this is the delicate balance, isn't it? Because you want people to be aware and to be conscious and also to take the positive health measures they can, but you also don't want a sense of fear and to overstate the risk here.
Yes. And remember that this is now a flu season.
Mm.
January is a flu season for the country. And elsewhere in the world, because it's, you know, almost everywhere in the world, it's very cold right now. So you must remind them that the flu signs and symptoms is almost the same as the signs and symptoms that the COVID-2019 is, you know, known with.
Mm.
However, if you don't have history of travel from the affected areas, specifically China, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. So let's get into the nuts and bolts then of the things that we can all take into our own control. And so initially, you know, what are the recommended measures if you suspect or fear that you might have symptoms of the coronavirus?
Well, first of all, you must ask yourself, did they have a travel outside of the country from the past 14 days? If you have a history of travel from China or Hong Kong, Macau, Taiwan, that's where the areas are being targeted in terms of history of travel for the country, for the Philippines. So if you've been there for 14 days from the time that you have this sign of respiratory illness or fever, you must call the nearest health facility or hospital. It's very, you know, it's very good for you to call them before you go there, because otherwise you can see a lot of queue in the hospital. So,
and I assume that the health systems are overloaded at the moment, so you know you need to take the measures you need to take, but also you need to be mindful of the system.
Yes.
Struggling to cope.
Yes, of course.
And I think on that, I'm not sure if you can confirm the numbers, but you know, I believe there's about 65,000 known cases, and of that there's about 63,000 or 64,000 in China. So it is still quite localized, isn't it, to one region?
Yeah, and also I would like to explain that the spike with the numbers, that because they change or revise.
So just over the last sort of 12 hours, there's been a jump in known cases by about 15,000. But actually, you're explaining that that's because of really a sort of technical broadening of the diagnosis.
Yes. So right now, China is classifying their confirmed cases as lab confirmed, or those who were tested in the laboratory, and the other one is for the clinically confirmed, all those patients who have findings in their X-ray testing. So in China right now, you will be called or classified as confirmed case even though you don't have a laboratory testing that you have the virus, but you are positive for chest X-ray finding, you will be classified as clinically confirmed. And they went back to the other cases that they had since the beginning of the outbreak. So that's the explanation for the spike on the cases in China.
Right. So it's good again to keep this in context. Like there's a lot of fear because these numbers have jumped up, but actually it's just a restatement of the figures. And I think conveniently as well, when the infected case number increases, it actually reduces the severity because then the deaths relative to the infection cases actually drop. So it's maybe below a sort of 2% rate now, maybe.
Definitely.
Okay, and then so if you feel you've got symptoms, what should you do in terms of your daily activities? Should you skip work? Should you avoid public transport? Should you wear a mask?
So there's a guideline from the Department of Health on the preparedness and response on the workplace. So they can go to the website of the Department of Health for that. It's quite long, so I will not discuss it in
Yeah, and
detail.
we'll put that in the show notes,
Yes,
so go
yes.
and see that.
Please do so. The first thing is that if you are sick, if you have fever or respiratory illness, you must call sick. It means you have to stay at home and then call your supervisor or your boss or your HR department to inform them that you are sick. And then if you develop the symptoms, if you have difficulty in breathing or shortness of breath, you must visit or call the nearest facility within your home. However, if you only have respiratory illness and you think that you're just up and about, no fever, you can always wear a mask. So medical mask or face mask is recommended for those who have respiratory illness, so that you cannot infect others, or your cough or sneeze can be covered by your face mask or medical mask. And then you must also wash your hands frequently, or you have a readily available alcohol wrap in your pocket. And then we also have guidelines on the transport, the LRT, the MRT. It's part of the guidelines that Department of Health has, wherein they were advised to clean, disinfect all the point of contacts. The point of contacts are the elevators, the stairs, and it's also applicable for the PPOs because most of your offices are in a tall buildings. So it's advisable that every hour, somebody must wipe disinfectant, just a normal,
Right.
your ordinary disinfectant, to all the elevator buttons, doorknobs.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And so we should maybe have covered that earlier, but how is this transferred then? Well, commonly, I think people assume that it's by coughing or by breath, but this is also has been confirmed as it can be transferred by touch or on surfaces.
So basically, it's a droplet transmission. It means droplet means when you cough, when you sneeze, when you sing, when you talk, there are droplets of coming from the upper respiratory part of our lungs that goes out. But because they are large in particle, they drop within 1 meter or within 3 feet from you. So it means it cannot travel beyond that. So if it drops, it can drop to a surface, it can drop to a person. That's why we are saying that if you cough or you sneeze, you must cover it, or you must flex your elbow to cover it. And then if it drops in the surface, it must be clean, it must disinfect, so that nobody will be touching it.
Right. So, and do you know, is it very resistant once it's outside of the body? Can it stay there sort of minutes or hours or days?
The data on that is not yet fully realized, but there are some preliminary reports from China that they have indeed some, they did environmental investigation. It means they swab some environments and they found the virus.
Right.
But the data on how many hours, Will it stay or minutes or seconds? It's not yet that confirmed yet.
So this needs to be taken seriously, but it's also about calming any panic, and it's really just about sticking to what should be normal best practices in terms of frequent hand washing, you know, using face masks if you're, I suppose, at risk or sick, and keeping surfaces clean, and just basic hygiene, and that's probably the 80-20 rule in terms of the biggest impact on preventing the spread of this.
Yes, you are correct. So it's very basic. It's what we do every day, actually. But in this kind of situation, we enhance it.
Mm.
So if you do hand washing every 4 hours, now it can be every 2 hours or every hour. Yeah. So it depends on the frequency of your exposure or your contact to possible sick person or possible contaminated areas.
And is there anything proactive that people can do? Now, you know, I just read this morning that a lady for Valentine's Day is a florist is selling a corona bouquet, and it comes with a mask. Is there anything proactive people can do to keep healthy, such as vitamins, such as, you know, there's probably a lot of snake oils coming out of the market to help people stay healthy or prevent these things. Is there anything that you recommend, or is it just a good diet, good sleep, and the basics?
Yeah, it's the healthy lifestyle basic recommendation that we have. It's have a good sleep, exercise daily, have a balanced diet. That's everything that you need it to have a very good immune system that can fight off any virus, not just this virus.
Mm.
So it's nothing special. It's just the usual thing that we do.
Right.
As
And maybe just watch out for those in your community that are slightly weaker, or maybe the elderly, or people that are prone to.
You have to avoid sick persons, especially those who have respiratory illness. So that's and also you have to cook your meat and eggs and fish properly or thoroughly, because it's not just for COVID 2019, but for other bacterial.
Great. And so I want to bring this round then to, and we can finish off with this, but the BPO industry, it's a huge sector in the Philippines. It employs 1.2 million people. A lot of these people are in high rises. They're in, tight office situations. A lot of them are based in Manila. A lot of them are working night shift, different shifts, long shifts. So there's a lot of, people are tired, people are coughing, and there's a lot of sort of communal environments. Do you see, is this sort of a particularly high-risk industry, or what can the industry do, do you think, to sort of make this not a big issue?
Yeah, first of all, it's a part of the general public recommendation by the WHO that you enhance the personal hygiene practices. If somebody is coughing, they have to wear a mask. And then, of course, if they get the symptoms persist and they get develop a more difficulty breathing or shortness of breath, they have to go to the clinic or to the health facility. So the HR of BPOs can actually be proactive with this. No? They have to put up materials or posters to remind the employees or the staff that they have to enhance their personal hygiene practices, their cough etiquette. There should be hand washing, soap, and tissue papers that are available in their sink, because sometimes people want to hand wash, but there's no soap. There's no, they have to be available. And then, of course, because that's what I told before, that the point, touch point of elevators, doorknobs, and even your keyboards
right.
should be cleaned every day. So that would be added a precaution for BPOs. And of course, you have to maintain a healthy lifestyle. So even though they are on night shifts, they have to have an 8-hour sleep after work, have a balanced diet, and then exercise. And all of these things, these are preventive measures that doesn't need, medication or vaccine, but these are the things that are available in each and every one of us that we can do our part to stop the spread of this disease, and it will not enter the community as well.
So the basic is the lowest hanging fruit, which is really, keeping people healthy,
yes.
Not overworking them, ensuring that they have adequate rest and they're eating well, and then, as you say, not only maintain the expected hygiene, but maybe ramp that up,
yes.
in terms of cleaning services, ensuring that the CRs and washrooms have the necessary things to keep,
yes.
hands clean and keep things clean. You were mentioning that it would be wise for HR departments to have an action plan, or certainly to start building out these plans so that they have responses. Would you recommend that really that would just be really mimicking the guidelines of the Department of Health?
Yes, thank you for reminding that. Yes, HR should have a preparedness plan for this kind of health events. This would help a lot when the true scenario comes. So it would be good for HR to do scenario building based on the Department of Health guidelines. Because in that guideline, it said that you must have a referral, a system on how to refer sick staff or those who are suspected to have the disease. So it has to be the HR and the management should meet and discuss that guidelines, and then they can seek assistance, technical assistance from the Department of Health to explain it much further, and then they should have a document, a preparedness plan documented, so that anybody who is on duty when the thing happened, when there's a suspect case or a confirmed case in their office, they know what to do.
So the outsourcing industry is all about having 100% uptime and being reliable, because there are clients that obviously need these services in place. So it is very vulnerable, I think, to disruption. So it would be highly sensible to have, as they do in terms of technology, have redundancies in place, and have very clear action plans, whether it's for the coronavirus,
yes.
but just generally, even a flu outbreak.
Yes, definitely. Because if a flu outbreak is actually having so much effect on the reproductive area of the disease, so it actually evolves every year. That's why you have a vaccine every year. And then, based on the study, influenza is actually the first cause of absenteeism, not only in the workplace, but also in school. So, I think the HR should have a very good plan on influenza. If they have it, it can also be applicable to any respiratory illness.
That's true, isn't it? It should be a key document for the,
yes.
HR, because, as you say, absenteeism and sickness and even,
yes.
the common colds and flu is such a huge cost to these organizations.
Yes.
So it's certainly worth looking,
yes.
into. And as you said, there are the guidelines by the Department of Health. We'll put the link in the show notes, so make sure you check that out. And so, as you say, look, this is a serious situation, and the World Health Organization is really,
doing an incredible job in terms of assisting the local governments in managing this. I believe also they're reaching out to philanthropic organizations to get more funding specific for this. So, you know, we've seen incredible organization and execution of how to manage this. So, yeah, I want to thank you for that. Is there anything else you do want to cover, or you think it's really just reiterating that people need to stick to the basics and also then refer to their local health provider if they have any queries?
Yes, that's it. And also I would like to enjoin everybody to fight infodemics. It's the proliferation of fake news in the social media. So if you want to get the proper or the exact information, please visit who.int. That's our website, and also doh.gov.ph. That's the website of the Department of Health.
That was Wang Capistrano. She is the lead consultant for emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases with the WHO. As mentioned, if you want any of the show notes, any of the links we mentioned in this, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/corona. And if you want to ask us anything, as always, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.